Hi there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher. I'm a current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so on this podcast, I share strategies and frameworks. I tell stories of what worked, but also some of my big epic fails. I talk to experts, and all because I truly believe that teachers play a profound role in helping students reach their creative potential. And two of the topics I talk about often are design thinking and project-based learning, but I've actually never done a podcast where I address both of these at the same time, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. This is something that I often get into when I do workshops. I do a lot of professional development on this topic of PBL by design, and so I want to kind of explain what I mean by that, what it looks like, and what this overlap might be. So, project-based learning and design thinking have both become buzzwords in the educational landscape. But beyond the buzz, both PBL and design thinking have rich histories that span decades, if not centuries, in some cases. Both approaches offer practical frameworks for teachers who are crafting authentic projects for their students, but it can be a little bit confusing. Like, what is the relationship between PBL and design thinking? When and how should we use each approach? Is either option better for our students? And so today I want to talk about this overlap between the two different ideas. You can imagine it this way. Project-based learning on the left as a Venn diagram, as a circle, and it has PBL, right? Project-based learning. And that is your pedagogical framework. In other words, that's the framework for how you organize the learning in your classroom. And then on the right, you have design thinking, which is a creative framework. It's how you organize the creative process for any creative work that you're doing. And often that is a creative process that you do outside of school, right? Design thinking is very popular in the corporate world and in engineering and in social services and civic services and all kinds of spaces. And so what happens though when you overlap them is you have this project-based learning on one hand as your pedagogical model, and then this design thinking on the other hand as your creative framework. And this overlap is what I call PBL by design. It's a design-centered or design-centric model for project-based learning. So let's talk for a moment about the bigger why of PBL. And then we're going to get into what exactly we mean by project-based learning, design thinking, and then that overlap. So that's what we're going to do in this podcast today. Let's start with the why. So what happens when teachers design projects that empower students with voice and choice? Students embrace a maker mindset. They define themselves as inventors and creators. They take more creative risks. Here they experiment and engage in iterative thinking. When this happens, they embrace a growth mindset and grow more resilient. They become problem solvers and systems thinkers. They become divergent thinkers who are like these hackers thinking outside the box, using the creative constraint to find original uses for materials. Here they discover it's okay to be different. Often students embrace curiosity and wonder, and they become explorers seeking out new ideas and information and thinking critically. They grow more empathetic as they design meaningful products that they launch to the world. On a more academic level, students are more engaged in the information sticks. Because it is more experiential, it becomes easier, especially because there's built-in retrieval practice for students to commit information from short-term to long-term memory. They're also more engaged, which means they're more focused, there's more of a commitment to what they're doing, and all of this means they remember more of the information, but also you tend to have increases in student achievement. There's been some great research about how PBL is actually good for test scores. Not that I particularly love using tests as a metric. In fact, I think it's one of the worst ways to ask, are the students learning? But in general, it does lead to moderate increases in student achievement. But also, while this is happening, they're learning key skills like project management, collaboration, communication. And it's true that these projects will prepare students for the creative economy, but more importantly, they empower students for a creative life. Here they see that making is magic. Now, I know that there is a time crunch in schools. Materials can be scarce. Sometimes you have a tight curriculum map. Sometimes you have a very tight list of standards to teach. So if that's the case and we know that PBL works, then what do we do? I would argue that one of the best options is actually to find this overlap between project-based learning and design thinking. But before we take a deeper dive into that overlap, let's look for a moment about what we mean by PBL. Now, bear with me for a moment. I'm going to give you a little bit of the history of project-based learning. Why? Because I am a history nerd and I love this kind of stuff. So you can skip. Press on that little button, the little plus 15, plus 30, whatever it may be on your podcast app, and just go to the more practical side because I'm going to nerd out for a moment. Project-based learning isn't a new concept, so I think it's important to remember that because even if it might be a buzzword right now, it is not trendy. It is not merely a fad. The truth is nobody knows entirely where PBL began. I love how Susie Boss ties it back to Confucius and Aristotle and Socrates and argues that actually PBL in many respects is a timeless idea. Personally, I see a lot of the roots of PBL in Rousseau's Emily, and if I screw that up, it's because I don't speak French. I don't know. I remember reading it, although in English, in a history class in college. Now, elements of PBL, though, really emerge more firmly at the turn of the last century in John Dewey's 1897 notion of learning through projects, which was part of his pedagogical creed. And then in Heard Kilpatrick's 1908 project method. But the truth is there were also elements of PBL, Authentigaudians, learning by doing, inquiry-based learning, problem solving, that also existed in sort of a parallel area, which was vocational education and trade schools. And I think sometimes we still have this stigma attached to trade schools and everything is all about college and career readiness. But the truth is, I think there's a lot of, there are some real valuable lessons from trade schools and vocational ed that we need to be incorporating into the so-called core curriculum areas as well. Now, if you ever get a chance, take a look at Google's Ingram Viewer. And this tracks the frequency of terms used in all published materials. So it's not how often people talked about, but how often they wrote about certain ideas. And the phrase project-based learning first grew in popularity in the 1990s. So even though you see it as a phrase emerge at the turn of the century, it really begins to move up very steadily from like 1980 until about 1990. And then it starts having this steep increase around 1990 to 2010. And then from 2010 until now, it's been an even steeper increase and much more popular in mainstream as an idea. And I think it's partly this. With the rise of automation, artificial intelligence, and machine learning, many schools have sought project-based learning as a way to develop essential soft skills like collaboration, communication, creativity, problem-solving, information literacy, global citizenship, empathy, whatever it may be, that again, we as humans can do that machines can't do. Project-based learning offers a way to develop these skills while mastering the content at a deeper level. Now, it's important to recognize that PBL is not a learning theory, right? It actually fits within the broader learning theories of constructivism and connectivism both. It's more of a pedagogical framework, which is about how we craft and organize our instruction. And there are a lot of different PBL models out there. So if the framework is PBL, within that you have these models, and there's like the PBL Works gold standard. That's probably the most common and popular. Personally, I love the high quality project-based learning model as well. There are some good ones that Stanford has come out with in the past. There's some good ones from the Project Zero and what they've done. But I looked at several of these different models, and I came up with a list of components of PBL that you see in most of the models. So here, in general, are some of the things that you're going to see in most of these models if you explore them. You tend to have a provocation, challenge, or question. You have student inquiry, authenticity, and often this authenticity has a focus on connecting to the community. Student-led investigations that lead to internal construction of knowledge, right? So they're developing the knowledge on their own. Student voice and choice, both in the process, but also the finished product of what they create. Student self-direction at the individual and small group level. So they're becoming self-directed and they're learning both individually, but also as a group. In other words, it's more of that ownership of the learning. Meaningful collaboration that often includes built-in interdependence. So group members are depending on each other in their group. Project management, student reflection throughout the process, ongoing peer feedback and revision, and a final public product. Note that this can feel really different compared to more traditional pedagogical frameworks. Often PBL will involve key paradigm shifts that we as educators have to make. This includes a shift from culminating projects to a system where students learn through the projects. In other words, you don't do a traditional unit plan and end with a project. Instead, students discover the content through the projects. Another shift is toward student choice in the design and away from highly detailed instructions. I love the way Chris Lehman puts it, where he says, if you design a project and get 30 of the same thing back, it's not a project, it's a recipe. And he makes that distinction between project-based learning and recipe-based learning. Also, you have students engaging in meaningful inquiry rather than, you know, doing pre-planned questions. Often there's a shift from the teacher as a director of learning to being more of a facilitator, right? Or moving from the sage on the stage to the guide on the side. And I think it really helps sometimes to ask the question, what am I already doing that's similar to PBL? Because chances are you might be doing some elements of PBL already. You might have them do public products that they share, or some kind of project management, or you might be giving them choices and choice menus, or you might be providing them with challenges and questions that they answer. You might have them owning the research process where they come up with their own questions, and then they find the answers on their own. And whatever it may be, really, I would say build on those areas that you're already doing. And ask yourself, how can I take it to the next level in terms of project-based learning? So that's PBL. Now, design thinking, on the other hand, is a creative framework. And bear with me, I'm going to share the history for a moment as well. Design thinking is a human-centered approach to creative problem solving. It's used in the arts, in engineering, in the corporate world, and in social and civic spaces. Like PBL, it's a bit of a debate where design thinking originated. Some claim that it started in the 60s with the sciences of the artificial. Others point to Design Thinking, which was a groundbreaking book which focused more on urban planning and architectures. Other people point to Robert McKim's work in experiences in visual thinking. But the truth is, there are a lot of different ideas. Some people actually take it all the way back to a few different ideas, going back to a more Scandinavian human-centered design approach of the 50s. And then at the same time, this idea of Buckminster Fuller and design science. So Scandinavian cooperative design and Buckminster Fuller's industrial design that focused on sort of human-centered design. And the truth is, we're not really sure, you know, where it began. But what I think that shows us is that it has always been multidisciplinary. And being multidisciplinary that means it connects to any subject that you teach at school. And I think that's the big takeaway there. Now, while there are many different design thinking models, the most common is probably the Stanford D School model. AJ Giuliani and I realized the need for a more student-friendly framework, specifically for the K-12 audience. We added more of an inquiry phase. We added a research phase. We made sure that there was an explicit launch phase. And in the process, we designed the launch cycle. It starts with look, listen, and learn. The goal here is awareness. It might be a sense of wonder at a process, an understanding of a problem, an observation of a natural phenomenon, an awareness of a social issue. But it also includes empathy with the community. That empathy piece is critical in the first phase. And then sparked by curiosity, they go from the L to the A, ask tons of questions. That then leads naturally to the U, the research phase of understanding the process or problem through a more authentic research experience. They might do needs assessments, conduct surveys, watch videos, listen to podcasts, conduct experiments, make observations, whatever it may be, do video chats with experts. The key is that it is authentic. They then take the newly acquired knowledge to potential solutions in the navigate ideas phase. Here they not only brainstorm, but they analyze ideas, combine ideas, and generate a concept for what they will create. From there, they then create a prototype, and that prototype could be a digital work, a physical work. They might design a system. They could put together a service. They might plan an event. And all of that fits into the idea of prototyping. So again, look, listen, and learn. Ask tons of questions. Understand the process or problem. Navigate ideas. And now creating that prototype, which then leads to this revision phase of highlight what's working and fix what's failing. Here they view the revision process as an experiment full of iterations where they get to continue to improve their work in an authentic way until it's ready to launch. And then when it's done, they launch their work to an authentic audience. They send it to the world. Based on the audience feedback, they can then move to a new iteration if you want them to, where they're able to look, listen, and learn all over again. So what about this overlap of PBL and design thinking? Well, when I first started out on my PBL journey, I followed a loosely structured PBL model. This particular model avoided using specific phases in a project and instead focused on big ideas. These ideas were things like authenticity, sustained inquiry, student reflection. And while I loved the approach, I noticed something. My students still struggled with creative work. And I realized that I needed a framework that included specific phases or stages in the design process. I wanted students to engage in an authentic project in a way that mirrored the design process used in the real world. This is why I embraced design thinking. Now, I had done design thinking when I worked for a nonprofit in college. I was already familiar with the process. And I love the fact that it focuses on empathy and awareness, working to understand on a profound level the problems that people are facing, and then coming up with ideas and solutions in a way that is more horizontal rather than vertical. Now, design thinking is a slower process. It's a deeper approach that encourages research and revision. And unlike PBL, design thinking includes those specific phases or stages in a project. This can add the necessary structure missing from certain project-based learning experiences. So again, by integrating design thinking or building my projects around design thinking, I'm able to more accurately and authentically reflect the way people do creative work in the real world. At the same time, project-based learning provides the pedagogical model needed for design thinking. With PBL, we have key competencies, necessary protocols, certain design elements that we need to have in our lesson plans. If I attempt to use design thinking, but I fail to incorporate PBL, students will not learn the content in a deep way. In other words, PBL provides the elements for the learning process, but design thinking provides the elements for the creative process. So if we want to use both frameworks, how do we actually implement it? A great starting place is to ask if project-based learning experience works with design thinking. Some PBL projects actually don't need design thinking. You might use the engineering process, the inquiry process, an open-ended independent process like Genius Hour, or the scientific method for a specific science project. Design thinking really works best when you have an authentic audience and you can center the project on student empathy. If design thinking works well for your project-based learning and you're going to plan a lesson around it, then you can begin to actually plan it out. And you might want to organize your project according to the phases of design thinking. So in the Stanford D model, there's different phases that include, you know, ideation and prototyping. And I think it starts with like understanding or something along the lines of that. For our purposes, we're going to use the launch cycle since that's what I helped co-create. And so you really begin with the phases of a project. For me, it's look, listen, and learn, ask tons of questions, understand the process or problem. Again, if it's the D school model, it might be define, ideate, create, revise, you get the idea. And so what I do is I break the project up into these phases based on the design thinking elements. And then inside of each phase, I make a checklist of the PBL elements and I make sure that those are actually in each phase of the design thinking PBL that you're doing. So if you look at the show notes, you'll actually see it on the blog post that connects to this particular podcast episode. I have a table where I have the design thinking elements, the PBL elements, and then PBL by design. So how am I incorporating both design thinking and PBL into a PBL by design unit plan? For example, in Look, Listen, and Learn, I have a specific challenge or question centered on the community. And specific challenge or question is a PBL element. It's authentic as a starting point that it relates to the community and includes empathy. And again, that goes back to the PBL element of authenticity. Asking tons of questions, understanding the process or problem, those fit into the PBL elements of student inquiry, student-led investigations, student voice and choice in the process and the finished product. So you get the idea. What you're doing is you're organizing it by the design thinking elements, but you're making sure that these PBL elements are present throughout the entire PBL by design unit plan. As you plan out these specific lessons, you can then use protocols that are more common in the PBL world, like driving questions, need to know, project management, but also ones that are used in design thinking, like say a day in the life, needs assessments, challenge assumptions, you know, those different kinds of protocols. The first attempt might be clunky, and that's okay. It's gonna be a learning process. But the more that you blend these two frameworks together, the more you will notice that these two frameworks actually merge together really, really well. Ultimately, when we combine PBL and design thinking, it leads to better projects and to deeper learning. Hey, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Would you do me a favor? If you enjoy this podcast, would you leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever it is that you get your podcast? Also, if you are interested in learning more about PBL or design thinking, I do all kinds of different workshops on, you know, design thinking on its own, PBL on its own, or on this idea of PBL by design. I also have some self-paced courses that you can check out. You'll find all of that in inside of the speaking area of my website, which can be found at spencerauthor.com, and just click on the speaking option or the courses option and you'll find all of that information. But again, thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.